Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we are watching Top Chef Season 10, Episode Number 8.
Oof.
We're moving along.
Halfway through? Almost?
Yeah. Well, there are an odd number of episodes. I would say this is the halfway point.
Yeah. This is always when stuff gets good.
Yes.
I like this number of chefs. Yes. And this was a fun episode. We were kind of all over the place, like the thematically mm-hmm. doing a lot. But that's par for the course for this season. This has been an excellent season of Top Chef, as we know.
Yeah, this isn't a season of like fast cuts and yes. like lots happening within an episode.
Yes, it's sort of like the final season of Game of Thrones. It's like, how did you get from there to there in an episode? Not sure. Okay.
It's also
going with it.
I feel like we're dogging too much on season 21 on the, like in our rewatch. But of season 10, but like, I think a lot of our criticism of season 21 was like, it was slow paced.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like, whoa, we're getting a lot in every episode and it's fun.
Yeah, like, whoa, Josie's stuck in the mud. Whoa, like, now they're cooking for a woman named Jalapeno Business. Yeah.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Bits, do we have any leftovers or potlucks to take care of?
We don't. We can just dive right into the main course.
Let's just begin.
All right, Nancy, amuse-bouche reactions to this episode. Take it
you
away.
You go first. I feel like I just gave mine.
Oh, huh. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I love this episode. I think that – I actually love the – I think we were talking a lot and heaping a lot of praise on the Reynolds wrap of the Quickfire last week. For me this week, the goofiness of having to cook a dish inspired by a roller derby woman's name was just really fun, especially because so many of them like were worked
yeah.
for food. Is that a thing? I don't know. But
I have so many questions about how they picked those women.
It was also fun to see people cooking together that don't normally cook together.
Yes. We had good pairings.
Yeah. We had some interesting pairings happening. And this, there wasn't knives drawn. This was just like pick somebody to work with, right? Yeah. So that was super interesting to me. So all in all, I was digging this episode. But let's start with the quick fire. The chefs get kind of like a vague note from Padma to go and pick what you need here and then meet me and Emeril. Very Tyra Mail.
Yes.
So what ended up happening? Where did they end up?
So this is another, I know I like really was excited about last week's Reynolds wrap, Quickfire, and I remain incredibly giddy about that. But this is another flavor of Quickfire that I love, which is like hunt and gather.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This is a different, like, yes.
It's akin to actually in the mise en place? They didn't do a mise en place relay on this season. It was when in the Top Chef kitchen, they were like digging through sand piles. And we wondered if they had placed the shellfish into those sand piles.
It's like,
there's not an answer on that.
In the earth.
But yes, like, it was just fun to see them like out in this giant bog. Getting oysters. I love seeing them just like eat, ripping them right there. As you said, Josie stuck in the sand. That was fun. It just, I don't know. They seemed really excited about it. And you could tell that those oysters were fresh.
Yeah. A lot of fond memories too. I liked learning a little bit more about Bart.
Yes. And Micah too.
Who went to cooking school at 12. Yeah. Okay. Wait. Both of these facts blew my mind. I was like, first of all, I didn't know pastors kept kosher.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that. Maybe it's like a, I don't know, whatever. So that was interesting. And then Bart went to cooking school at like 12.
Yeah.
Rock on. If you know, you know, I guess. But what did I want to be when I was 12? I think a marine or a dolphin trainer.
Not even a marine biologist. I wanted to be an architect because I thought it sounded cool.
Yeah. Zaha Hadid over here.
Oh, she knows the name.
I went to – I saw like one Zaha Hadid documentary with Alex once, and I was like, I know I'm supposed to be like blown away by this, but it was so boring. It was so dry.
Well, then you definitely shouldn't see The Brutalist, that movie that just came out.
I might be interested in that.
I believe it's 4 hours long.
Oh, that's long, but at least like brutalism is like centered in some sort of like moment in history and time. Like, there's, sure, like, cultural, political, like, the surrounding conversation is interesting. This was, like, here is Zaha Hadid, and, like, let's talk about this building. But not to say she's not interesting. But we digress.
It is a very interesting episode in history. I agree with you.
Let's return to the beach. So the chefs have plucked their oysters from Mother Nature. They return to the Top Chef kitchen. Josh very astutely guesses that they're either going to be making something with the oyster or shucking them in some sort of race. I don't know what other options there are besides those, but he was right. So the thing that I thought was really fun about this quickfire, though, so the chefs have to make an oyster dish for Emeril. Emeril is in the house. There is a stack of red aprons and a stack of blue aprons. And if the chefs want to make a cold preparation, they have to go blue, and a hot preparation, red. I loved this. I thought it was fun that, like, they weren't forced into anything. They could kind of choose, but some people, like Sheldon, were sort of like shit out of luck.
Too late.
Which temp preparation would you go with?
Cold.
If it were up to you. Same. I thought that was, like, so...
I was amazed that they all wanted hot.
Yeah, because that feels like where you can screw up. I think you can just...
feels like where you can screw up, and also considering the freshness of the product that they have, like...
Right.
These are... they picked those themselves an hour ago. Those right. oysters are delicious. And so...
great point.
Cooking them just feels like ruining the product in a way. Yeah. I also, like, I just prefer cold oysters to not to hot ones. So that's me. But yeah, so they get to pick, and we had some, I mean, I think I would have eaten every single one of these preparations.
Wait, can we start with Stefan? Because I laughed, especially after we spoke last episode about how he keeps making stuff with potatoes.
He somehow found a way to put... why did you need to make a potato vinaigrette, my guy?
He put literal potatoes on an oyster. It's like, okay, I've seen it all. I love it.
He cannot... I'm really amazed that they haven't called him out for how many effing potatoes he's using.
But potatoes are the best.
The man might turn into a potato if he doesn't be careful.
What if he is a potato and he's like, they're buying it? I guess you wouldn't want to cook potatoes if you were a potato, though.
Yeah, that would be like homicide or I don't know.
Potato anyway, side.
Potato side. Spud aside. So, okay, so Stefan did a cold preparation. Let's go through the cold ones first. He did a smoked cold oyster with potato vinaigrette. Good for him. Then we have Josh also making a cold oyster with a pickled cucumber, soy, and cilantro preparation. That sounded tasty. Mm-hmm. And then we have Lizzie, who made a crushed currant juice and pink peppercorn one. Beautiful looking. But
yeah,
she said she
that sounded awesome.
She said she, you know, she was didn't know how the berries would turn out, but there she is. And then finally on the cold preparation, we have Brooke with her salsa verde, cilantro, and horseradish. Horseradish oyster is an elite combination.
Mm-hmm.
It's not surprising, but oh my God, is it so good.
Yeah. Yep.
Just divine.
I would eat any of those, but I am most piqued by Lizzie's because it's very different from anything. And I love pink peppercorn.
Yes. Oh, sorry. I forgot that Sheldon also did a chilled Old Bay seasoning broth with ginger, scallion, pesto.
Oh, yeah.
That
his sounded also really sounded too. Incredible.
All of the cold preparations sounded excellent.
Yeah. Yes. Agree.
And then in the hot preparation, Kristen made one that seemed like cuckoo bananas, caramelized honey and tomato broth with celery leaf. There goes my regret on the counters. Should have included celery. Oh, wild. I also need to update that we actually miscounted. I said that there were 14 bacons, but actually last episode there were 3 bacons, not 4. And so there are only 13 bacons this season.
Ah, okay. Well, thank you for...
and no bacons in this episode.
Mm.
We got our first no bacon episode this
no
week.
No bake zone.
No bacon zone. Don't try it. Okay, moving on with these hot preparations. So we have Kristen did hers. Then John did a garlic butter poached with garlic parm foam. So he was going off of the classic oysters Rockefeller. Rockefeller Senna. Shout out Matt Rogers.
Rockefeller Senna.
What did you make of this innovation on the Oysters Rockefeller?
I don't know. It felt a little bit like I made it for you. That's my only critique of it.
Okay, fair.
Like, okay, I thought of you. I don't know. I thought
you might like it.
Right. Yeah.
It's like the girl who has a crush in high school and is like, I made these for you.
Yeah. Yes.
Also, because like Oysters Rockefeller is a big preparation in New Orleans. Emerald's definitely had that a million times.
Yeah. And like it's sort of like cooking. I don't know. I wouldn't want to cook like something that this guy serves at his restaurant.
Yeah.
That's it. That's so that's it. What I think.
Yeah. John. Okay. So next up we have Josie, who made a chorizo cream. Unfortunately, her sauce was broken. People really fucking up with chorizo on this season.
Yo, I don't know. It's too fatty.
There are also two types of chorizo. There's like the crumbly type of chorizo, and then there's a hard type of chorizo.
Yeah, like the closer to like a hard salami.
I prefer the hard chorizo.
I go both ways. Sorry, I shouted that. But I guess I cook with the like raw chorizo more than
the cured.
Cured. Like Sheldon's recipe, for instance, that Portuguese bean soup I was talking about last episode calls for chorizo. And I think it's like the medallions of like the cured stuff, but I usually use the crumbled.
I fell in the first time I ever had chorizo. Because I remember, I was in ninth grade and my family took a trip to Argentina and my dad had a business associate there who had us over to his house for a Christmas Eve asado, which like at the time I didn't realize how fucking cool it was that we were going to like a real live Argentinian asado with like the open flame and everything. Once I arrived, I realized how cool it was.
Yeah.
But like it was sick. And a very popular, like early in the night, because essentially they're just like roasting the meat all night and right. It's slowly coming out. And they're just like, do you want it? Do you want it? Do you want it? Like as it comes out, you get like a bite of steak here, a little bit of that. And early in the night, they came out with these little sandwiches that are called choripan, which is essentially grilled chorizo, like the harder kind, the less crumbly kind that's actually in a sausage casing with this like delicious – like it's sort of like a chimichurri on like just toasted bread. And it was like – it's not one of my earliest culinary memories because I was like 14 or whatever. So I have them from earlier in life. But it was one of the first times where I was like, whoa, that blew my mind.
Yugugugoy.
Yugugugoy. So that's my personal story with chorizo. And then I remember coming back to the United States and like – always seeking out chorizo on menus. And then in most places in the United States, they use the crumbly kind. And it was never the same. Never. Anyway, I then went back to Argentina on a business trip and like insisted that we get choripan. And we did. And it was delicious. Okay, enough about me. Because as you say, I always like to make it about me. Let's move on to who was in – oh, we haven't even finished talking about the hot preparations. So then we have Micah making a crispy fried oyster – arugula, lemon, and chili. This sounded so good.
Yes. I just love chili. What's a girl to do?
What's a girl to do? But also like fried with a really fresh green salad. Like that sounded so delectable to me.
There's not a single oyster in this quickfire I wouldn't have eaten.
I agree.
I know Bart got some shit for his like champagne. Like, oh man, champagne oysters. Like, ooh. Like, I bet it's not that. I'm sure it's hard because you guys hold a really high bar for what you think excellence is. And I really admire the like culinary industry for doing that. But I would eat any of these.
100%. I'd put them all down my gullet. And I bet I wouldn't find a single flaw in any of them.
Like a seabird that can just hold like...
I'm like a Pez dispenser of these like 10.
Hot and cold, baby.
Hot and cold. Okay, so yes, Bits alluded to Bart's champagne oyster. And I think that is everyone in this challenge. So on the bottom, we had Josie whose sauce was broken. Bart, champagne sauce masked the flavor of the oyster. And John, his garlic butter oyster Rockefeller. if you're going to do Oysters Rockefeller, you have to say Oysters Rockefeller, like Christopher Moltisanti.
Yeah. I actually can't even understand you if you don't say it like that.
Yeah. No R's allowed here at the end. No hard R's on the pod. So anyway, John was on the bottom for his Oyster Rockefeller. On the top, we have Brooke, who made it into the top despite having shells in her oyster.
Yeah, so you know that's
which
good.
Which means, yeah, you know that oyster was delicious.
I feel like most of them had shells in their oyster. Because, like, these aren't, like, I don't know. I've shucked, like, two oysters in my life, and I know it's really hard. So I'm not judging anything. I wonder if, like, more people than what we saw had shells in theirs.
Interesting. Yeah. Who am I to judge? Who are we to judge?
Who are we?
Self-proclaimed podcast host judging the show. Judging a show that already judges people on a show.
I love our contribution to society.
This is late stage capitalism at its finest.
I hope there's a podcast that critiques our podcast. Okay.
If we could only be so lucky.
I think Emeril had a good time though.
Yes, he loved all of them.
I think he'll be back.
Yes. And by the way, Micah with his fried oyster is the winner of this challenge and therefore receives immunity.
I'm so happy for him, especially because like he equated cooking for Emeril like Moses meeting God, which I thought was really fun in its hyperbole.
Yeah.
All right, so let's chat elimination challenge, which starts off very swiftly following the quickfire. Padma introduces that the chefs are going to be cooking for the most competitive something, some team, some Seattle
roller
team.
Derby.
And it's roller derby. No, but she was like trying to be vague about it. She was like, you're the toughest team. Oh, that's maybe what it was, like the toughest team in Seattle. And then in rolls the roller derby on the roller skates. Not blades. That's different.
That's different.
It was so chaos. Really fun. It was pure chaos. And so the challenge this episode, the chefs pair off, as we mentioned at the top of the episode, they pair off and they have to cook a dish inspired by the name of one of the roller derby gals. So Nancy, did you happen to catch each gal's name?
Okay. I wrote them down. Before I even say this, I need to know if this team made up these names for the challenge or if these are their real names. Because what are the odds that we are filming in Seattle and it happens to be the finals of roller derby and the team in the finals happen to all have food-themed names? Like, I don't believe it. I call bullshit.
I will say that – and maybe you know this already, so sorry if this is like common knowledge. I think that like roller skating is incredibly big in Seattle. Like the culture is very big in Seattle. I have a coworker who's like a major roller skater, and he picked it up when he moved to Seattle. And him and his wife both roller skate. Like it's a I think it's like culturally like a big thing there. And maybe I don't know. Maybe I just happen to know a guy who's like also really happens to be into it. But it seemed to be like the casual hobby that you do if you live in Seattle.
So I think you're right. Add it to the list of things I don't like about the Pacific Northwest. regardless of that, like I totally believe you, but I'm saying like what are the odds that there's this single team that's in the finals?
Yeah.
All have food themed names. Like I need – I'm going to look up the team and I'm going to see like what the deal is because – something smells fishy to me, and it's not those oysters they just shucked. So anyway, let's talk about the names of these players.
They're purported names.
Yes, purported, allegedly. So Josie and Bart are going to be cooking in the honor of Teriyaki Terror. Then Terror. I don't know why I said it like that. Teriyaki Terror. I'm still on my Oysters Rockefeller grind. So we have Teriyaki Terror. Sheldon and Josh are cooking for Tempura Tantrum, which I liked. That was really clever.
Yeah.
Stefan and Kristen are cooking for Eddie Shredder. Brooke and John are cooking for Cut a Rump. And finally, Lizzie and Micah are cooking for Jalapeno Business.
Jalapeno Business. Mm-mm-mm. Seems honestly to be the only one that I could conceivably believe they like just that's
Tempura
their name.
Tantrum is very clever.
Tempura Tantrum's clever, but it's also nothing to do with roller skating. Like Jalapeno Business, like kind of, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to critique, like my brain hurts trying to think about this, but.
Was Elliot Page in a roller derby movie?
Yeah, I think so. That sounds familiar.
Gotta look into that. Okay. Once again, we digress. So these teams need to cook a dish that will be served at a concession stand, but it shouldn't be too traditionally concession-y, for the league final party, which is the night after the final match, which the chefs get to go to. And they all have to cook in the honor of the player they have selected. So let's talk about just, again, another capital D drama moment in the Top Chef house. After the roller, so they all the chefs go to the roller derby, and it's clear that they're drinking, having a good time, and Josie, who is naturally very boisterous, is getting like really into it, and you could tell that some of the chefs find her a bit grating. I don't know where I fall on the spectrum. I think she was just having a good time,
right?
And maybe not everyone's cup of tea, but they return to the house, and Micah essentially is just like, hey, Josie, could you keep it down? Like, he really says it in a very polite way. He's just like, hey, we're all just chilling out now. Let's take the energy down a bit.
Yeah.
And Josie just, like, pops off at Micah.
Well, she was asleep on the couch. Or does this happen after the initial blow?
No, it's like when she's asleep on the couch and she sort of, like, rises from the dead and, gets into an argument.
And she was like, you don't want to climb this tree. I thought that was funny.
You don't want to climb this tree. That was an incredible one. But then, you know, they're just like kind of hurling insults at each other. And I once again must ask the question, like, did these chefs hate each other or is this production cooking up drama?
I think that there was a lot of big personalities in the season. And I think there was probably like a decent amount of drinking. Like, I think people were probably just like living loose. I'm with you. I see both sides. I'm like, look, she's just having fun, but you also have to know, like, just regulate your vibe.
Yeah.
You're already twice as loud as everybody and like, look, that it is what it is. But yeah, it is and this persists. If I recall correctly, like this drama like continues.
Yes.
And now what'll happen is it's gonna ratchet up because like the chefs think that she should go home for skill, then she doesn't. Then it's going to – this is like a Robin 2.0. Mm-hmm.
And then it gets into bullying. It's just like not fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm glad that they have gone away from this trope in the editing of the show.
Yeah.
Because it – like that's not what viewers tune in for.
No, yeah.
We tune in for good cooking.
We don't tune in on like multiple people ganging up on one person. Like – I want a one-to-one, you know what I mean? I want an evenly matched brawl.
Yes. Well, let's talk about brawling because we got some dishes going head-to-head. So in honor of teriyaki terror, Josie and Bart made a steak teriyaki with forbidden rice, beet blood, and green papaya salad. What did the judges make of this dish, Bits?
Not much. Yeah, they were not enjoying this plate.
I think
Bart again gets the feedback like underseasoned. Mm-hmm. And Josie gave him that feedback mid cook and he was like, okay, and he adjusted it, and then she never tasted it again. So they end up where they end up, which is on the bottom. Who else ends up? Let's kind of talk like who are the clunkers of this
affair. Josie and Bart's dish, the teriyaki terror, is on the bottom along with Sheldon and Josh. Surprisingly, Sheldon says, you know, like, I do tempura in my restaurant all the time. And Josh is like, he says he does it. Like, I imagine it's true. And what was interesting about Sheldon and Josh's dish is I think that the judges were all excited about it conceptually. Like, it was a fun dish.
Yeah.
And it really was an elevated way of approaching this challenge. And I think had the tempura been executed well, it maybe would have won.
Mm-hmm.
For this reason. Like, it wasn't too fancy. It wasn't too pretentious. But it was inventive.
Yeah.
And I think that it would have given the jalapeno popper a run for its money.
That's probably what saved him. There was like a conceptual idea there.
Yes, because otherwise the main focus of the dish was not executed properly. I would put that akin to improperly cooking your protein, which we all know is the kiss of death. So I was bummed to see them on the bottom, but I think that because it was such a strong concept, they were safe.
Yeah.
Which is great. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
We are.
Let's talk about the dishes that were great. So Stefan and Kristen, Brooke and John, and Lizzie and Micah all make great dishes. Let's start with the middle of the pack, which is Stefan and Kristen. So they were representing Eddie Shredder, and they decided to like turn a chicken inside out. What did you make of this dish, Bits?
I liked the idea. I like that these people were like having fun with this idea. Like it felt like a complete 180 from a few episodes ago when we're at Pike Place Market and everybody's like, what do I do with truffle popcorn? Like, I don't know. Like there's something like unlocked. It was like I already said, I think it was fun to finally see Kristen and Stefan cook together. This was the first time I think they were paired up.
Yep.
Even though they've been kind of like buds in the house. So that was fun. Yeah. Super clever. What about you?
Yeah. There is nothing about this dish I would eat. Like, I'm not a huge liver girl. The, like, texture of liver with a sunny side up egg, like, all of that did not appeal to me. But it was cool. It was fun. And it seemed to, like, be something that they got excited about. So that was fun to watch. Then in ascending excellence, we have Brooke and John, who made what I thought sounded like an absolutely delicious dish. It was a Thai beef. With slaw and lobster rice. This felt like a really Bits dish to me. I know you like a Thai beef.
I do, yeah. That did sound really good. I liked everything about that. I like that there has like a little bit of a fresh angle. Mm-hmm.
The relationship between John and Brooke.
So, yeah. Again, there was like that weird moment where he's like, hey, thanks for giving me a chance. Like, is this, can you further center this show on yourself? Like, can this more be about it being your, like, documentary? I don't know. It just feels like so weird. It's like, what script are you reading from? Like, what story is playing out in your head that we're, like, watching from the side? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
At an oblique angle.
To me, the dynamic between Brooke and John was really interesting. And I know that like every episode I keep finding a new metaphor for who John is. But this week I have decided that he is the kid in school who like can't quite get in with the cool kids. And so he thinks that he can imitate their behavior, but he thinks it's like cool to be mean. And so he like acts with a lot of bravado. And then like the cool kids are like, dude, that's kind of mean. Like, why are you talking like that?
Like the plot of 21 Jump Street?
Yes, literally the plot of 21 Jump Street. And it's like Brooke is just like this really even keel, like nice girl who's like, it's okay to just be nice to people.
Yeah.
And I think that like her just incredibly calm demeanor completely, like I don't think it deflated him in any way, but I think it just for some reason.
Neutralized him.
Yeah, neutralized him. That's exactly it. Like he didn't feel the need to like be his normal caricature.
Yeah. There's nothing to play off of her. Like
yes. That's exactly
it. She's alkaline. Yeah. Like.
Yes. And like she's like, I'm here to cook really good food. And I know how to make good food. And I think it also comes like because she's performed so well, I don't think John thinks that he's like better than she is. I'm sure he does, but I think that he respects her enough to
not. But he knows he can't say it. Yeah.
He can't be like, my idea's better because objectively she's performed way better than he has.
Yeah, and nobody else in the house has beef with her or like has said anything. So it's like
no one has beef with Brooke.
Yeah, he can't start it.
So their dish is great. The judges are super stoked about it. Well done. Spice builds well. Good seasoning. Everyone's happy about it.
I'm not surprised that they did well together, to be honest. Like, because I think for that reason, like I think she can kind of like bring – He knows what she is, and he knows, like, I'm going to benefit if I just sort of demure.
Yes. Very mindful, very demure.
He was very mindful.
But, okay, this brings us to our final team, and the winning team, Lizzie and Micah, who make a jalapeno popper for jalapeno business. This is a crab-stuffed jalapeno with fried with an avocado, crema, onion, and pepper relish.
I really liked seeing these two together. It was sort of like the last two people I would pair off.
Yes.
If I'm being honest. And I think not for any reason, too. But yeah.
Like when they paired with each other, they sort of gave each other a look like, I don't think we've spoken two words to each other this whole
yeah.
time.
Hey, what was your name? No, yeah. I thought it was super fun. Okay, let's talk about the jalapeno popper-ness. So to bring this sort of full circle, Micah and Lizzie end up on the top. Along with Brooke and John, Micah and Lindsay end up winning this episode. Following the winning, we bring in the losers, the bottom. Josh kind of has his CJ moment, and he actually calls it that. He's like, at the risk of like, you know, sounding like CJ.
It didn't work the first time. Yeah. What on earth would you do it the second time?
I don't know. And he just like really like went in on the, you know, like, I'm sorry. I thought we weren't supposed to make concession food like a jalapeno popper. Like, what's that? And you could just like see Sheldon like trying to just – I have to imagine if you're Sheldon in that moment and you're with that type of guy in that yes. type of moment. Like, I almost want to have a conversation about the, you know, guy who takes the fall during a team challenge. Because, like, Sheldon was, like, flirting with that prediction this yes. episode with, you know, because he knew that the tempura was his mess up.
Yep.
But Josh, like, really tried to push back. And like, maybe that's Josh defending his own food. I don't know. We've had a lot of that this season. Honestly, it's going to be hard to...
Yeah,
but all to say that, like, I don't know. I guess the point that I'm coming back around to is like, I didn't think the jalapeno popper was, like, a cop-out or, like, an offensive
not
idea.
At all.
It didn't even occur to me.
They did it so well. Like, and it was either Padma or Tom who was like, you know what made it not a concession? They put really good – oh, it was Tom. He was like, if they had stuffed it with gross cheese and dunked it in flour and batter – and fried the, like, living daylights out of it, then, yeah, it would have been a concession.
Right.
But, like, just because their inspiration came from a concession doesn't mean that's what they created. Like, everyone commented about how delicious the crab was inside, how nice the heat was. Everything was balanced. Like, sorry, my guy. Like, it's almost like when he's backed into a corner, he shows the worst side. It's like his true colors are, like, not very attractive.
Yeah.
And he's always looking for someone else. And, again, Sheldon squirming. It's because, I mean – I'm like obsessed with Sheldon, but Sheldon would never and doesn't ever put himself in the context of others. He's like, this is my performance.
Yep.
Judge me for what I put in front of you.
Yep.
And this goes back to the countenance of a top chef. The judges don't like people who are not like confident, secure, and leaders who can take accountability.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sheldon didn't flinch at saying, I did the tempura.
No.
And
I was bummed that it just didn't work out for him.
Like it wouldn't have been, yeah, it wouldn't have been an issue.
It's funny, a certain bit, and like this is the same story with Josh and pork. Like some people who have just been making stuff they make all the time, like it's really not working for them.
Yeah.
But
anyway, flipping to Josie and Bart, which we talked about. So Bart unfortunately ends up going home for their team. And I thought it was an interesting discussion at judges' table, and they did it to both of the teams. They were like, well, when you gave the feedback, did you then follow up on it? And it was it almost felt like splitting hairs at this point. Like mm-hmm. the judges were maybe taking it too far. And I get it. Tom said, if I'm in the kitchen and I give someone feedback, I check it to make sure it's right. Yes, 100%. But it's like, well, you know, you're on a team and you didn't speak up. Well, I didn't want to cause any friction. Speak up. So then she speaks up and they're like, but you didn't speak up enough.
Yeah. Like, you had to speak twice, actually.
Yeah. And so, well, of course, in a perfect world, the judges were totally right and valid in that. It felt a bit like they continue to move the goalpost on that mm-hmm. aspect of team challenges, which, again, valid and fair. It just, I imagine as a chef competing, it might feel a bit frustrating.
Yeah.
Or inconsistent.
Yeah. Luckily, Bart doesn't use enough salt. And so Padma yeah. has like the sickest burn of all when I don't even know if she means it as a burn, but like he gets eliminated, he gets sent home, and Padma's like, Bart, I'm sending you a bag of salt.
Yeah. Unnecessary, Padma.
That dude's food must be really not salted. But yeah, like I believe him too that like people don't send stuff back. I don't know. Just yes.
Tom also had like a bit of a meltdown moment where he was like, I don't understand. I say this every time. If you have one component that's seasoned and one component that's other seasoned, when you put them together, they are under seasoned.
Yeah. Glorious.
Glorious. He just
can we so we yes. skipped over this earlier in the episode, but Pat talking about Padma reminded me of it. I want to just give credit to how good Hugh Atchison was at creating roller derby names.
Yeah.
Like kind of out of thin air.
What it was Pat. One was really good.
Yeah. I liked Smack Me Lakshmi or whatever. Smack You Lakshmi or something.
Do you think he came in with those like locked and loaded or do you think he.
I don't care if it was rehearsed and pre-planned, like it was, they're good. Yeah. What was Emerald's first one? I thought the first one was better than the – he was like,
yeah, Emerald was Bam, like, I want Bam Bam Lagasse. I'll go back and look. It was silly and cute and fun.
Yeah, it was good.
Loved it.
But, yeah, dude, kind of crazy episode.
Silly episode.
We're starting to see the pack kind of break up, though. Uh-huh. I think, like, we're starting to see Brooke pull out in front, Kristen pull out in front.
Big time.
I still think John's, like, kind of flirting with the, like, middle of the pack. Josh hasn't really had a breakaway quite yet. Sheldon is starting to break away. I think this like was a little bit of a stumble, but he's been really strong otherwise.
Sheldon's so good.
So, okay, would you eat that? Bart?
Yeah. I mean, like a steak teriyaki, yeah, I'd eat that. Yeah. Even as it was prepared.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Sorry. What was interesting about this is like, normally the guest judge or like the guest is not necessarily the judge. I'm talking about the roller derby teriyaki terror, whoever she was. Normally that person like who is not a professional chef or like food professional doesn't really have a spot on opinion. Yeah. Like they'll just say like Chris Pratt last week is a perfect example of like there's a lot of it. Yeah. Or like, whoa, yum. But the Tempura Terror or Teriyaki Terror nailed it right on the head where they were like, what do you think? She's like, it's very gamey and not good.
and
like,
scene.
I don't know. I guess this is my being an asshole or like a snob. Like I wasn't expecting her to be so spot on with her critique. And the judges were like, it is not good.
She's a multifaceted person.
Yes, she is. Anyway. Okay. I digress. Bits, would you eat that?
Sure. Yeah, I'd eat it.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Bringing my box of salt, though.
Well, okay, so Bart goes home, and let me tell you what he's been up to ever since Top Chef. Bart lives in Washington, D.C. He is the owner and executive chef at Belga Cafe. He also is the Order of Leopold II Medal honoree, which I believe is from his home country of Belgium. He was on Master Cooks of Belgium and in a sort of underwhelming finale is an InBev ambassador, which means he clearly uses like AB InBev products at his restaurant.
Respect. I'm like still stuck on the fact that like they have like an award named after King Leopold II.
Why? What was up with King Leopold II?
Oh, he's the dude that, like, totally just, like, pillaged Africa in the 1800s.
That's like, the guy? Leopold
yeah, that's
II?
The dude. Yeah. I'm using my, like, PG language for that. But, yeah, he was, like, the major horrible, horrible colonizer of Africa. Like, the African continent. And, like, all of the rubber production and trade. Yeah, he was, like, a bad dude. Like, in a way that it sort of seems, like, close to giving somebody like the Hitler award. Like that is kind of crazy to me that they
award
somebody
that. Well, the Rhodes Scholarship
that.
Is the same thing. Cecil Rhodes was like a monster.
Jesus.
I mean, look, this is not reserved for just
who's Oscar? Just kidding.
I was gonna say this is not reserved just for European leaders. Like we got our fair share of them over here.
Come
Woodrow
on over.
Wilson. Not the best, perhaps. Okay, so. As it turns out, American history is full of skeletons in our closet. This is our land acknowledgement that we are recording this podcast on stolen land. but let's move on to Judgy Table, our final segment of the day. Bits, do you have a Judgy Table?
I do.
Good, because I don't have one. So you get to round it out for us. On your mark, get set, go.
When chefs call chefs chef. and not like to their face, like, yes, chef. Like, that's still kind of weird to me, but I get it. It's like part of your culture. That's totally fine. But when John, this episode, was referring to Emeril, who was standing right next to Padma, both of them are right in front of him, and saying to Padma, I'm making Oyster Rockefeller because chef serves them in his restaurant. It's like, can you just call him Chef Emeril? Or like Emeril or he, him? It was like, it's just weird to me. I hate it. It's like odd. It's like, you don't say like, yes, they're doctor's favorite. Like, you say like the doctor or Dr. DeLeo.
Okay, I see what we're talking
about. You
know
what I mean? Like, yes. Sorry. It's hard to describe because it's like just – chef is used so many different ways, but I can't stand that. It's annoying.
A chef by any other name would smell as sweet.
Yeah.
I bet Emeril smells good. Yeah, I get that. Grammatically, it is really frustrating.
Yeah, the grammatical thing it's the grammatical thing that annoys me. It's not like the yes chef culture, like that's fine, whatever. It's just like, I don't say like, oh, doctor loves them.
Yes, I completely understand. I do not have a judgy table other than like roller skating is really hard.
And roller skating is worse than rollerblading. Rollerblading is fun and roller skating is not.
I have tried roller skating in adulthood and failed.
We went that one time and I got horrible blisters.
It was bad.
It was awful.
Never again. Anyway, what you will hear again is our voices, because next week we will obviously be coming out with yet another episode. We're not just stopping at season 10, episode 8. We're actually going on to episode 9, surprisingly.
Crazy. We raised enough funding to go to episode 9.
Well, anyway, dear listeners, thank you for tuning in, hanging out, and we can't wait to see you next week. Bye.
Smell ya.